CliffCentral.com. Nail also hates his birthday being brought up. Right, Nail?
Yep.
How are you, man?
Good, and you, man?
Nice to see you. Yeah, you're looking fresh and full of life for a Wednesday morning after a public holiday.
Yeah, huh? That's what happens when you don't drink.
You're not drinking at all, or you didn't drink last night?
At all.
At all, huh?
Not anymore.
Are you a Muslim?
I had enough for all the years. Yeah.
Really?
So I'm not a Muslim, non-religious.
You made it up for all what your 20s. You were just a heavy drinker.
Yeah, no, I decided that I'll only start drinking again once I feel like, yeah, the business, we've made it and all of those good things.
Right, so you're saving it as kind of a reward.
I don't have time to have hangovers.
That's a lot of discipline.
That is. It's amazing. Neo Mashiko, everybody, is the co-founder and executive creative director of I See a Different You. It is the guys I had in here a while ago, right? They're amazing photographers. Yep. They do fashion photography. They photograph a whole lot of really interesting places, people.
Advertising.
Story. Yeah, that's a very, very interesting project. It's doing very well, right?
Yeah, we're doing, good.
That's good. Two brothers, one other guy.
Yes, myself and
you.
We've grown a bit. We've got three more people and part of the team.
Tell me about it.
About the whole project?
Yeah. This is
so basically,
boast
about
it. This is good.
No, I've got nothing to boast about. I see a different view, basically trying to change the narrative of how we are seen as South Africans and as Africans. So we're trying to control our storytelling in photography and video, online content, and anything that we do. So we partner with individuals, brands and agencies to do communication, but we like focus on like spaces that represent us in a positive light.
Right, so give me an example of how you would partner with brands and
so for instance, we'd partner with SA Tourism is an obvious one.
Okay.
Where we'll be like, it will represent South Africa and partnering with other countries to do photography in a different style. So we'll showcase the area that we're in, but like also doing like in a way that's going, this is how youth would travel, and this is what would be cool in our perspective, as opposed to just showcasing the big five.
So it's like authentic content. It's not manufactured content.
It's authentic and the neglected part of the content. You know,
no,
like there's like styles that brands go for, you know, and then everybody does the same thing.
Yeah.
So like
we're tired of that stuff, right?
Yeah. And it's not real, you know, and we're trying to do the stuff that most creatives and agencies want to do. You know, like when you're presenting, you're not always doing what you really believe in. You know, it's like sometimes it's like the rules of the brand would lead you into a space, and usually that space becomes the same space for most of the brands you work on, you know. So when storytelling becomes a big thing, everybody tells the story the same way, you know, because like it's easier to copy something than to do something very new.
That's exactly right.
Being
original is really tough these days.
It's high risk for brands as well.
Correct. And they have to trust you, and you have to trust them.
Yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't always work out well, but most of the time I imagine it does, because you understand each other, right?
Yes. And that's why for I See a Different You, we had to do it first as a brand. We made ourselves an example. And most of the people that come work with us, it's a matter of, we like your style, we like how you do it. This is what we want. This is the idea. Do it the way you see fit.
Well, let's talk about you for a minute, because you've been in the creative industry for a long time. You've been in advertising for a long time. This is something that, you know, now you're very important. I mean, you're the chairman of the Lurie Awards, for God's sake. You know, that's a big deal. I was talking about the Lurie's earlier.
Yeah. It is a big deal and an honor to get to this position. It's very tough to get here. It hasn't been a gentle journey, and for a black guy as well.
Yeah, tell me about that journey. I mean, when you say it hasn't been an easy journey, is that because you had to work twice as hard as anyone else just to get noticed, first of all, as a black guy in this business? Second of all, because there is an assumption so much of the time that either you're there because you're black, or the alternative, that maybe you're not good enough, but you're there because you're black. You know, it just kind of, it makes it tough, right?
Yeah, those stories are correct. But like for me, it was a bit different. There's like other layers that you never get to hear about. So I got in at the time where the industry wanted to have black creatives. So I got in through a program that was looking basically to go, if you think you have what it takes to be in advertising, apply here. And you apply and you tell us why you think you've got what it takes. And in that space, they're going, we're looking for black people specifically to be in the industry.
Right.
So there was that positive energy of like opening those doors. But then also once you are in as the individual, now you are now in the agency and you're the only black guy in the department.
Yeah, it's culture shock.
And it's weird. And like, and then second to that is everything that you love and care about, nobody really cares about or even know about it. So
it's very hard to sell.
Yeah, like, and then selling becomes like very tough. So, and then you have to work around that space. And then there's like also the mental debate that happens where you have to prove yourself within the things that everybody else likes before you prove yourself with the things that you like. And you need a space that allows the freedom for you to express that the thing that they don't understand. So if I'm like taking you through an idea that you've never heard of this thing before, but like you have to trust and believe that what this junior is saying is actually correct.
Are there a lot of people who did listen in the beginning?
Yes, I was fortunate that when I started, like my big boss was keen. You know, he was keen and he had like the right instinct.
Who
to,
is this?
Mike Shalit.
Okay.
So I started at Network and Mike Shalit was very good in trying to create the space that goes, go for it. Tell us what we have to do. You're not just a junior. You're not useless. You here. The reason you're here is to, you know, show us the way anyway. But still, you're also a junior. You're not sure yourself, you know,
right.
So there's like, you don't have another senior or middleweight black guy to go, you know, this thing, do you think it would work? You know, so like every time you're explaining mostly foreign concepts and then you have to do it yourself. So like those were like the challenges in the beginning. And then
give me an example of something. I think a lot of people hear these things and they feel they're fairly abstract. But when you're in an ad agency, it's very particular things. Like, for example, when you're putting an ad together, and the temptation so often in South Africa is, let's say SA Tourism again, is to show a bunch of like black kids dancing in the dust and stuff. And that is all that we can show off about like township life or, you know, rural life in like some vendor village. Yeah. That's what people will go for. Or the walls being painted a certain way. Or like a taxi. Or all the ordinary stuff. But what kind of stuff could you then, at the beginning of your career, did you try to introduce to people, mostly white people then, and say, listen, this is a thing that happens that people will understand. If we make an ad like this, it'll become, there'll be an interest. There'll be a result, it's going to have the right effect for this product or this brand or this person.
Yeah, like I'll just give you like example on like, let me say things that you'll be aware of. It's like car advertising.
Okay.
Who buys the most cars in the country?
What do you mean, who?
White male,
black, I would
white
say.
White female.
I would say black.
Black,
yeah.
Right? Who buys the most Mercedes-Benz and BMWs?
Black.
Have you seen a Mercedes-Benz ad with a black guy or a BMW ad with a black guy?
Maybe recently, but like, not long ago.
Well, yeah. They just pulled from like, Europe, though. But
like you're going even recently. So like you can imagine like 10 years ago, it's even like a weird concept to try and go, okay, this is what they do in the hood with this car. And it's like even 4x4 bikies, you know, they're like seen as boor cars.
Yeah,
but they're like a whole lot of black guys drive them in Transkei and everywhere, you know.
Right.
So, but like trying to do that. And why is it like that? Why is it so difficult to sell something that's obvious?
So instead of showing the Mercedes-Benz on the Autobahn with some old white dude with a beard driving it, they should show it in Umlazi on Sunday during a car wash where there's like a braai going on at the same time.
Or like you do the situation, the reason why people buy these cars.
Yeah. You
know? And there's like also like there's a whole lot of racial connotation to this. I'll tell you why they
don't do it.
I'll tell you why they don't do it. It's or in my view, uh-huh. at least. So you are there, you're BMW, you've got your sales team. They know who's buying. They know who their biggest market is.
Right.
But they don't use them in their advertising. So you going, I look good when I drive a big Mercedes Benz. I look like I've achieved when I drive into my old neighborhood in a fancy car.
Right.
You don't show all those things, right? Why? It's because most likely black people will stop liking the BMW or the Mercedes Benz.
Is that true?
I think that's one of the reasons. I don't know whether in the marketing department that's the reality. But if you make it too black, it's too available.
Takes away from that exclusivity thing.
It would take away.
Are you saying
it's like,
that the black?
It's my view. I think there's also the black twist.
No, but hang on. Know? So there could be black men who are buying a BMW Mercedes, who want to see it on that Autobahn being driven by that white
yes.
dude.
Yes.
This
you
is
want
so
you want to see the thing that you want to attain.
This
the
is,
place you want to
it's
get
so
to.
It's so complicated.
So
Neil.
once I see it in a normal environment, that's my environment.
Yeah.
When I'm going to my stock fair
right.
with my friends that have made it,
uh-huh.
we all drive in. When that situation is okay live, but I don't want to see it in the
advertising.
Ad. You know,
it's like it's like they've come into your space. Intimate space.
But yeah, that doesn't mean that there aren't any other ways of showing it for black men in a different light. You know, but those are the risks as brands that you have to calculate to go. Oh, is Neo talking bullshit or is this the reality? You know, I would like to bet that you do that thing. You switch black on that thing. You'll see. They'll go for the Jaguar.
Now, what about? When you started, that was clearly the way. Do you think we've come a long way, or do you think that there's still a huge distance to be traveled?
It depends on who's in charge of the brand. So right now, the individuals at the top of brands have like the power to decide how the conversation goes for that brand. And also internally within their businesses, they are also fighting that internal fight. So you come in, you are now, you're made chief marketing officer of this big brand. The CEO used to be the owner and the marketing director and the this and the that,
right.
you know. So, and he's also developed like a kind of a tone, a certain tone for the brand. And you come in, you've studied, you've done well with other brands, you've got all the accolades, and you want to change all of this.
Resistance.
It's not gonna be easy.
No.
You know, so you know it's gonna be difficult. So some of the ads, the examples I'll give you, you'd get stuff approved and then it will go down to like can I say this?
It'll
go down to any to the old bosses.
Okay.
You know, to show the old boss where this new brand, here's the new brand campaign.
Uh-huh.
And then it gets stopped. The old boss doesn't
and
like it.
And that's the end of that.
That's the end of it. You just need, so like next time as a marketing director, what are you going to do? You're just going to follow. Yeah. And as the agency as well, if you're trying to push boundaries and the boss is afraid, the marketing department is afraid. So like right now, like brands that do well is a combination of a lot of luck. But like agencies, strategy, research, all those things still work. But you need the right people in the spaces to get the work done. And South Africa has like a weird, it's just recently when like competition has really opened up, where there's more brands. Like most brands, they are like happy to be okay with their, they're not competing against each other.
They don't want to compete against each other, or they just avoid it because it's polite?
They avoid it because we are fine. We are all doing fine.
Why fight?
Yeah, why fight? You've got enough of the market. I've got enough of the market. Our numbers are looking good. Why is, you know, the old brands, why are we supposed to fight against each other? No, it's fine.
But the customers like it when they fight.
It works for the customer when they fight.
Right.
So when they don't fight, it works for the brands. You know, so the more open our market becomes, if you think about it, how much like washing powder soap did we have in the 10 years ago, we only had like two choices, three choices,
right.
whether you're washing with a washing machine or with your hand wash. There's like three four choices then.
Now there's more.
Yeah. As soon as you have 10, at least now competition can begin. But the new entrants to the market, like, it's much tougher for them because they're not known. You know, so that's why the old brands will always be safe. It's a smart thing to do.
So is it getting a little more representative is the question?
The industry is willing. So my view is the spirit is willing, but the body is weak. So, like, everybody wants the right thing for the country. When, like, we talk about it, when we make speeches, when we think about it even. But once we get to the action, you know, it becomes scary, you know.
And changes so uncomfortable. Yeah,
and if you think about it, if you've been in advertising for 20 years, and advertising, your corridors have always been white. You feel it when they become black. You know, I feel it when I'm in a boardroom that's just full of black people. You know, the tone is different as well in the room, you know.
Experienced both. You've experienced both, a boardroom just of white people with you, yeah, and then a boardroom of just black people. Now, how does the tone differ? I mean, explain it to me as if I was an alien.
Yeah, I like, when I'm in a black boardroom, I now, so first, okay, let me start with the white boardroom. The white boardroom, I was the, everything was foreign to me. Most of the things was foreign to me, you know, like, so the, you're making coffee, morning greetings, and you have to get into that character. So you, I'll tell you about the character with blackness. There's this thing I've just realized now recently. Anyway, so you are in character. You've got the right words to use in the morning, you know, and then everybody else will switch to their groups, you know. So the groups of, like, you, this is a golfing client service, everybody, you need to talk golfing and warm up the room, what's happening right now, we'll talk about the elections, oh, like, it's good that the DA has done so well, it's good for the country, blah, 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 and, but you're not going to say anything that's like you siding with this party,
sure,
or, you know, your stance.
You want to be neutral.
Yeah. But then you also, like, you're always, like, third in the queue in the conversation, because, like, they have more stuff to talk about because, like, there's an understanding. They do the same thing, you know. All their kids are on school holiday right now. 3 terms, private schools. They're on holiday. They talk holidays, you know. And so you, like, almost you're there, but you're not there.
Right.
And then you go into the black boardroom. You are there. You are live. You know, you're the guy that knows stuff. Like, if you've got one white person in your team, they are, like, kind of left out. You have to be bringing them in, you know? Because now, and, like, when black people get into one room, you want to switch to vernac.
Right.
It's the natural thing to do.
Right, your body wants this thing. Yeah.
It's like,
you know?
If I'm in a room full of Afrikaans people, they're all speaking Afrikaans. If I don't join in an Afrikaans, I'm out.
You're out, yeah. So, and what I realized is, it's a question that I've asked myself is, do black people have two characters? Like, and I'll just use it as, like, a South African thing to go, when you are in the office, do you behave the same way when we are with white people versus when you are with black people? It's like your character. I think I watch people where you, like, this is your friend. You know him. You know him when you are black and you know him when you are mixed. You know, so you get a sense that, no, man, this guy is different. And because it's, I think when you're going into a language that you don't speak all the time, you want to stick to your lane. Like right now, I'm sticking to my lane. You don't want to mess up.
You
want to
be safe.
You want to be safe.
Sure.
So you become the safe character, you know. So you can't express everything the way you want to express it. You see it with footballers when they're being interviewed on TV.
Yeah.
And if the ones that choose to switch to vernac, they'll express how the game was, and you get the sense.
I don't know if it's just a black thing, because I sometimes feel that way too. When I'm in important meetings and things, I can't be the me that I am on the show or that like I am with my friends.
But you are comfortable in, like, if your mind wants to express a certain thing the certain way. Like, if the best thing to say right now is, like, you can't do that in English. You don't know how to do it. But your mind is telling you that, hook up this word. Here's the term for this moment. And then you're going, no, sit down. stay in your lane,
right,
Benek.
I see what you mean. So you're constantly like guarding against.
Yeah.
You're always watching yourself. You're like your own sensor board.
Yes. So like, and in the industry is also
well,
like
that's
that.
That's how I am now on social media.
Yeah. So like one of the things that we had to...
yeah, that's...
you better behave.
Every time Gareth steps onto Black Twitter, he just like double checks himself.
I mean, it's not even fun anymore. No. I mean, it's
no. Social media is dangerous.
It's right?
It's not good for business.
But then I suppose that I'm going to draw a parallel, even if it's not exactly the same, that... I think a lot of people feel this way about a lot of situations. You know, sometimes when you're around the mother-in-law or you're around your grandparents,
yeah.
you have to give a toned-down version of you. In other words, when you're around your, let's say the family elders, let's say, you know, there's a big family gathering and you're with all the gogos and all the rest of it, then you have to be a certain you.
Yeah. Like in advertising, when you're like in a recording, right? When you record with a client involved versus when you record when the client is not there. It's like
so
the hottest stuff happen. You know, we used to have recordings at night with wine and everything. The voice artist is drinking. Everybody's relaxed.
You're getting good.
Those
good
are like
stuff.
Award-winning stuff. The performances that come out of there, like it's fantastic because everybody's like, it's like you know you're free. It's like the creativity flows. When you've got a client, the moment the voice artist steps onto the mic and then they're still testing their voice, the client is already saying, "I don't like how the way he said that word," and all of those things. You know,
in the beginning, the whole thing.
When we started, when I started in advertising, clients were not in the recording booth. They wouldn't come. They'd just get a disc. You'd go, you record, you go back to agency, give your creative director. They approve. They tell you to make changes. Then once it's finalized, that's only time it goes to the client.
I want to ask you about that. We can come back to this discussion in a second. But it's changed quite a lot. Like what you're saying is that the agencies used to have a lot more to do with how the product ended up looking in an ad or how it ended up feeling in an ad. They were the people who drove the creative process in the advertising. Now you've got a lot of these chief marketing officers /
brand managers,
whoever they are.
Yeah.
And these people are the ones who actually think that it's their job to just tell the agency to execute, but it's along their vision.
Yeah, the roles have switched.
That
you
never
don't
used
know.
To happen.
Yeah, it's like you'd have debates about wardrobe. What color T-shirt? I don't like that shirt. Why don't
but
you like
But you're a brand
it?
Manager
and
for
the,
a car.
Yeah, and the director. The director is like, you hired this person for a whole lot of money to come and make this beautiful thing, but then you are telling them how to make it.
Yeah.
You know, so
it's like when I go to the hairdresser, I don't say to the guy who cuts my hair, I don't go, well, I'd like it done this way and that way and that way, and here are three pictures of the kinds of hair. I say to him, you're the professional.
Yeah.
Cut my fucking hair. It's the same with you. If I come to you, if I go, no, I want you to design a beautiful ad for me.
Yeah.
Television, print, whatever it might be. Here, I just need, here's the product. Yeah. What do you need to know from me?
Yeah.
Do an ad. That's your job, right?
And they still want to hold you accountable after they chose everything against your judgment. You know, so like the lines are very blurred. But then again, it's not always like that with every brand. There's like people that understand the process that go like, this is where my role ends. I'm going to let you do it and I'll blame you if it doesn't work out. You know,
it's crazy. You can't win. You can't. There's no winning margin for you.
Yeah.
Like you don't design the ad, so you don't get the creative nachas and the fulfillment out of that. When it goes wrong, it's their fault, but you get the blame. It's a disaster. Why would anyone want to be in advertising?
Yeah.
It's like being an architect and all you ever design is public toilets.
And now that's why we have the lurries. So one of the things
thank God for the lurries.
The lurries' role is to showcase like innovation, creativity, you know,
right.
What stands out, what makes work stands out, you know, and also still where it's important is sell product as well, you know. So without the lurries, and a big deal that we've made is make sure that the brand managers and the marketing departments are like very involved in the lurries, so that we can work through this relationship together and like find ways that work, you know. So when you've got your brand manager, that's a problem, in at the office. sitting at the Lurie's and they are in a creative week and they're at a workshop.
They can see how much more brilliant these advertisers
are. Yeah, and they're sitting and listening. No, like they also get a chance to hear from other industry leaders that they never worked with, you know?
What I'm hearing from you is it's almost more, it's not actually a relationship like a job description relationship. It's more of a marriage. What you have to do is sometimes you look after the kid, sometimes they look after the kid. Sometimes you do the shopping, sometimes they do the shopping. Sometimes you get the shopping wrong, sometimes they get it wrong. Is it more like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I think there's a way around this.
Yeah, but we can make it easy. And that's where we need to marketers that are doing it well. The marketers that are doing amazing work, if you ask about how they operate, you'll find that they're really very good with their role as marketers. They're very strategic and they know what they want, you know, and they let their teams, like from going down to brand managers, everybody understands what the vision is. And the agency relationship with that brand is very good. So like it's a relationship where it's not a master and servant. It's a relationship where you're going, you've given me responsibility for this brand to communicate this brand, and I'm going to do it the best way. So I'm going to be honest with you when I think you are messing up.
Right.
And, you know, because sometimes you can't even tell your client that actually what they're asking you to do is the wrong thing, because you're just afraid that, okay, as an individual, as Neo, you'll be the one that...
But it's hard to do that, right? Because sometimes this company has been started by someone. They've got a product they designed, they made, they've marketed, they've made huge amounts of money out of.
It's like our telcos.
And you have to step in suddenly and say to them that you're wrong. I mean, that takes balls.
And who are you?
Yeah. But the telcos, I mean, the telcos from what I hear are very, very difficult. And I'm not saying you said this. Other people have told me. Very difficult to work with because they think they know everything. And because they've made so much money over the last few years, they're like God and they won't be told.
I think in the beginning they were great because everything was starting out for everyone.
It was new,
you know, and people were not that afraid because they were like the owners and the, you know, like because like these are the mavericks that like make stuff. They know what it takes to make stuff happen. You'll mess up sometimes. You know, that's a big important thing. Like failing is not a bad thing.
Well, no, in advertising, if you fail, you know? They think it's hell.
Yeah. So in advertising, you get fired, you know, and then what does it say then to the whole rest of the team?
Agency to agency to agency. But this is what people do, hey, in these big corporates. Am I right? You've got a marketing manager or a creative director or whatever it is in these companies. And if they don't think that an advertising campaign was good enough, next day they fire the agency and move on to another one.
Yeah. Or they don't fire the agency, they just let go of the creative director.
Sure.
Or the strategists, they're like, oh, we don't want this person in our business anymore. And then the agency has to like find a role. If it's a decent agency, they will move the person in a decent way. And, you know, life will still, they'll still be on that person's side.
So that's telco started off being... You know, a little more risk-taking and interesting.
Yeah, and now they've... Yeah, so, like, most of the people that are responsible for the brands, like, they like being hired for this thing. They're new in the job, and they can't fail. They can't mess up. And the mess up is, like, lots of
money. Super corporate, right? So everything goes through about 6 chains of command.
Yeah. So, like, yeah, we never talk about, like, job interviews. Nobody ever says, what happens if I make a mistake? You know, it's not a conversation where you're like,
that's such a good point,
you know, that you have and you're going, okay, I work for Cliff Central. If I mess up on air, this one time I mess up, every time I've been doing like amazing, you know, what happens?
That's such a good point.
And am I covered for that? You know, like, cause like, especially in like spaces like with creative, I'm required to
test
stuff. Yeah. Right. And if I try out stuff and it doesn't work and then I lose my job or I lose the position or I'm treated like a piece of shit, then everybody else that's watching this thing is also like on panic mode. Nobody wants to try out
stuff. And you'll get nothing good out of them.
Yeah, exactly.
and being as careful as they can.
Yeah.
Isn't that an interesting question to ask?
Nobody ever thinks to ask that in a job interview.
Yeah, and we're not covered. Like, there's like a lot of jobs that are like, they involve a lot of risk for you as an individual, but there's no cover for you for that. You know, like, it's just like salary negotiations. You know, football coaches have it. You know, they've got a contract. You know that you can get fired, you lose 5 matches, your job is done. But the contract says what you're going to get paid should that happen. You know where you stand. You don't want to get fired. Okay. You don't want to lose matches, but you know where you stand. But like most industries, we are in like similar positions as the football coach, but we don't have that cover. Yeah.
What about campaigns that go really well? I mean, give me your dream campaign. You've won a bunch of awards. There must be one or two of these that you look back on and you go, well, everything just worked out right. I had the right people in the brand to deal with. I had the right amount of budget, because sometimes that's also a problem.
Yeah.
They gave me freedom to create something really special.
Yeah, I've fortunately worked with a lot of good brands and good marketers. And the difference for me is that the person that you're dealing with, the person that you have to answer to, you know, that relationship is very important. If they are like, they are also, I think most people are creatives, and there are people that are not willing to exercise their creative muscle. You know, but like generally everybody is creative, you know. So if they exercise that muscle in the process of creating, you know, then you get good work. For me, the best one for me would be, because it had high risk and we all needed to have balls at the time. It's we've been having it for Vodacom.
That was yours.
Yes.
I love that.
Oh, so that was definitely one of the best.
We spoke about that for weeks and months. We waited impatiently for every ad.
And we were very sad when they stopped.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a judgment call that was made that they can't flight them anymore?
No, so the beginning, so that ad, we only shot it maybe a year later after it was presented because of the fear. So, and then the department was afraid at the time, and they said, okay, we can't produce this. And then we waited.
What were they afraid of?
Because it seems like we are talking about African dictators. At the time, it was generally African dictators.
Let's just play
we can't be doing that.
Let me play this.
Hi. I've been hearing this propaganda about this Vodacom and all its fancy tools and stuff. But I don't understand. I mean, we've been having it. Yeah. They talk about things like up-to-the-minute weather reports. But come on, man.
Hey, Kaisa! How hot is it out there?
Boiling, sir!
You see? We've been having it!
And they talk about having movie trailers on demand. I mean, take a look. Matrix. We've been having it. There's another thing that they just can't seem to stop yapping about. This mobile TV. TV on the move? Jomo? We've been having it. And then they tell me that you can get full songs playing when your phone rings. I will lay that one to rest right now as well. Jomo, call me.
How long ago was that?
I don't know.
Damn, dude. That was incredible. I mean, that was really incredible because the fact that I still remember it now, 2008, okay, roughly.
Yeah.
I can remember immediately when you said it. Like, that's a campaign I remember. There are not a lot of campaigns anymore that you'd remember like that.
And to think, at the time we shot it, and then Mugabe did something, and then we couldn't fly it. Cancel all flighting. And then, Romeo at the time was Romeo Kumalo. He had balls. And, you know, he went like, no, this campaign, we actually not saying anything about Mugabe. And anyone that's like a dictator, we can't be like going, we are backing and supporting dictators.
Yeah.
If they messed up, they messed up.
Right. You know?
So we're going to fight it. Anyone that's offended is somebody who's for dictators, really, you know. So, and yeah, the last...
It's a good argument.
Yeah, for me, the last one was like TIA for DSTV.
Which one is that again?
Just good. TIA, it's This Is Africa. It was a DSTV Africa campaign where it just like highlights the different misconceptions about Africa. And
Okay, hang on. Let me play this quickly. I got it. Let's see if we can remind everybody about this one too. DSTV TIA, This Is Africa, all right? So you can't see the pictures, but we'll try and explain.
TIA, you'll hear them say. Say Africa's a dark, dark continent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So dark.
We agree. They say we're always shooting each other. Of course. They say kids are hungry here. We know.
Yes.
Starving.
So hungry.
They say we live in the bush. Uh-oh. It's true.
So true. So true.
We love a rose bush.
Flowers.
And that we look to the world for inspiration.
Beautifully, beautifully shot, huh? Wow.
They say we're backwards. So backwards. Yes, sir.
Oh, yes.
And that animals roam freely here. So, yes, this is Africa.
Beautiful.
But not as they see it, rather as we know it.
Beautiful. I remember that.
That's, like for me, it was one of the times where you could work with a brand and say the things that you've always wanted to say and things that matter to you and, you know, and it also rings true to the brand, you know.
How has your work been affected in a world where I can't even wait 5 seconds to skip the ad on YouTube, or if I'm watching something on catch up, I don't even have to bother about ads coming in my way anymore? How does that impact creatives going forward?
I think creatives will always have a role, and because they the part that touches and engages with the human spirit, and you know, so like brands will always look for ways of communicating with people. Whether if we've got catch up, then the creatives will move to the story that you want to watch on catch up. You know, that movie that you want to watch. Like if you look at like the stuff we watch on Netflix and all, there's a whole lot of advertising within them. But it's like a very smart way of doing it, you know.
So it's the way it's being produced and the way it's being shown to us has changed.
Yes.
Well, listen, I'm looking forward to the Lurries. You'll obviously be there.
Yeah, boo.
Very good.
And just to add, like, we've got a masterclass now at the Lurries.
Oh, wow.
Where, like, the masterclasses offer people an opportunity to learn about the different aspects in that are involved in creativity, like for brand managers, creatives, to go, like, this year, Mike Shalit is doing the creativity versus strategy, which is like also like that, how to work the two, you know, and how to get your brands and people to be more creative in the environment. We also have the DSTV conference where we'll have all our jury panels presenting how they've managed to do all the amazing work, and obviously the main events, the two nights
of the awards.
And what we've done, we do for students is portfolio days where students can come in and showcase their work to the industry leaders.
That's very cool.
And you get picked there. And like usually all those students are like amazing that are willing to come and showcase their portfolios.
They must be. And then they get hired on the spot.
Yes.
Now, what about one last challenge for you to show that you're not afraid? If Donald Trump had to ask you to be his advertising guru and spin master, what would you say?
I would agree, and then I'd make him do all the wrong things. I'll make him do. Just make sure that he doesn't win.
I don't think that's actually. I keep saying it might happen, but the statistics will show a completely different world.
Yeah.
And I'm seriously, a part of me hopes that he has no hope in hell of getting close.
No,
another part of me says that it would be quite funny if he did.
He's made sure that he doesn't win, but it won't be funny if he wins. It won't be funny at all.
Oh, I don't know.
We'll be.
Apparently, he was only watching the Olympics to see how high the Mexican pole vaulters could go. That's all he's interested in. Thank you, Neil.
Yeah,
very nice to see you.
Thank you, thank
Neil
you,
Mashiro, and he is, of course, the chairman of the Lurie's. Board member there too, and the Lurie's are happening next week, and we'll tell you more. I'm going to go down. Aria Kelman, who's our creative director, will go down too, and we'll let you know what happens at the Lurie's. It's going to be very, very exciting.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Cool. CliffCentral.com.